Last week, we explored the idea of solitude and silence. This week, today, we explore the idea of solitude and struggle, which explains the two accounts that Jean just read, biblical accounts of struggle. In the first account, Jacob sets himself apart and wrestles all through the night. At dawn, Jacob's wrestling partner realizes he cannot win. So in lieu of winning, he tears a muscle in Jacob's thigh and requests release. In turn, Jacob requests a blessing. The wrestling partner gives Jacob a new name, Israel, because he has struggled with God and with humans and has won. The wrestling partner leaves. Jacob, now Israel, leaves with a long-lasting limp, a holy reminder of struggle. In the second account, we meet Saul, a prominent persecutor of early Christians, a man who harasses Christians, dragging them to prison, deporting them to foreign cities. During one of these bullying trips on his way to Damascus, Saul experiences the supernatural, a sudden encircling light and a voice from heaven, a light that shines on him and a voice that calls him out, an experience that blinds him, causes him to lose sight, leaving him lost were it not for his travel companions. But even with them, his three-day physical and spiritual darkness surely creates anxiety and causes trouble, signs and symptoms of struggle. For Jacob and for Saul, struggle brought about change. Struggle led to transformation. Jacob reconciles with his brother Esau, establishes his family as a God-worshiping people, and receives God's blessing, a large group of nations, and a place to call home. Saul's sight is restored. He is filled with Holy Spirit, and he begins to proclaim Jesus as Son of God. Struggle, whether middle of night or middle of day, whether alone or with others, yields growth. In the words of practical theologians Janet Hagberg and Robert Gulick, we cannot escape most of the struggles in our lives, nor should we. In fact, these events frequently provide the energy for movement on our spiritual journey, even when we get stuck along the way. If we let struggle touch us, if we live with struggle and embrace it, as difficult as that is, we are more likely to grow. I want to look at one more example of struggle, the struggle of the woman we call Hagar, the woman our Muslim sisters, brothers, cousins call Hajar. The Hebrew Bible portion of her story begins in Genesis 16. Hagar was an Egyptian slave, poor, single, bonded, young, fertile, and Sarai's maid. Despite God's promise that Sarai and Abraham would parent many nations, Sarai did not conceive and so took matters into her own hands. Sarai speaks, Abram agrees, Hagar, who Sarah sees as nothing more than an instrument, Hagar conceives. This is exactly what Sarah wants. But when Sarai realizes Hagar is pregnant, things begin to change. Struggle ensues. Hagar's status rises. Sarai's status drops. Sarai becomes angry, furious, and begins to treat Hagar harshly, so harshly that Hagar rises up, takes charge of her life, and leaves, fleeing the house of bondage, going into the wilderness near the Egyptian border. near the place that used to be home. Wilderness is a good place for Hagar until a messenger of the Lord finds her. The messenger of the Lord asks her two questions and speaks to her in the imperative, "Return to your mistress. Go back to the place of struggle." Despite her best efforts, Hagar cannot escape the struggle with Sarai. Hagar returns to Sarai, to the house of bondage, to the place of struggle, and Hagar gives birth to a son for Abram. And Abram names him Ishmael. Our Hebrew Bible portion of her story picks up again in Genesis 21. By this point, Sarah has given birth. Abraham has named that baby Isaac. Abraham throws a huge party on the day that Isaac stops nursing. And on the very same day, Sarah sees Hagar's son Ishmael laughing. His laughter angers Sarah. So much that Sarah demands that Abraham send Hagar and Ishmael away. This time, Abraham gets upset, but God says, "Don't be upset about the boy and your servant. Do everything Sarah tells you to do, because your descendants will be traced through Isaac. But I will make of your servant's son a great nation too, because he is also your descendant." So Abraham gets up in the morning, takes some bread and a flask of water, gives it to Hagar. He puts the boy in a sling on her back and sends her away. But this time there's nothing good about the wilderness. This time the wilderness is a place of struggle. Hagar wanders through the desert. She runs out of water. The struggle is real. She places Ishmael under a desert shrub and steps away to weep. Anticipatory grief. She is sure Ishmael will die. And a messenger of the Lord calls to her. "Hagar, get up, pick up the boy, take him by the hand, because I will make of him a great nation." Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well. She went over and filled the water flask and gave the boy a drink. God remained with the boy. He grew up, he lived in the desert, he became an expert archer. He lived in the desert. And eventually his mother found him an Egyptian wife. For Hagar, struggle brought about change. Struggle led to transformation. Her first struggle, that of Sarai's abuse, led to her taking charge and fleeing to the safety of the wilderness. Her second struggle, being sent back to Sarai, became prolonged struggle. Something she could not escape but had to outlast. Her third struggle, being thrown out, banished, abandoned, birthed an entire nation, an entire faith, a faith directly connected to our own. Struggle, whether it sparks quick change or slows us like molasses, whether it triggers turmoil or launches new beginnings, yields growth. Again, in the words of these fantastic theologians, Hagbard and Gulick, we cannot escape most of the struggles of our lives, nor should we. In fact, these events provide the energy for movement on our spiritual journey, even when we get stuck along the way. If we let struggle touch us, if we live with struggle and embrace struggle, as difficult as that is, we are more likely to grow. Solitude and struggle. I don't know about you, but for me, struggle shows up uninvited and unwanted. I don't want it, and I can't escape it. So the questions become, what do I do? What do we do? How do I respond? How do we respond? When we become bitter or resistant, when we become calloused or numb, we are likely to get stuck, locked down like quicksand, trapped in deepening trenches, welded to old ways, prone to fade out, to give up, to accept defeat. But when we become receptive, intrigued, curious, engaged and open to possibilities, we create this fertile space, this room to breathe, portholes for light, gateways to new opportunities, space in which to grow. Struggle is real. Disease happens, financial crises occur, families become estranged, mental illness, addiction, natural disaster, false dualism, toxic polarization, institutional hard-headedness, tragic accidents, violent extremism, acts of terror. Struggles are real. Despite our wishes, struggle happens. None of us can live a life without them. And while the temptation is great, so very great in the midst of it, while the temptation is great to shut down, the opportunity is to open up. To open up to the transforming power of God, to open up to the renewing grace of God, to open up to the ever-present mystery of God. God who wrestled with Jacob, giving him a new identity. God who altered Saul's vision, renewing his life. God who walked the journey with Hagar from escape the whole way to rebirth. God who stands in the struggle with us. God who invites us to open up. So we can grow.